Hello, everyone. Happy Monday. And a wonderful Monday it is. Last night, I played a Muru Ganar song that was translated into English. And I told you that I thought it was great that they translated these songs into English so that we could understand the words, but that there was something about the sound when it was still in Tamil that I really enjoyed, something that was very devotional. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play a Muru Ganar song for you that is a Tamil devotional in Tamil. We won't understand what he says, except we might catch Ramana every now and then. If he happens to mention Arunachala, we might hear that. If he happens to mention Shiva, we might hear that. But for the most part, we're not going to understand the words, but that's all right. Let's just listen to the devotion, shall we? So here is a Muru Ganar song.
இறைவனே ரமண நல்லால் பரதெய்வம் அறிந்திலேனே இறைவனே ரமண நல்லால் பரதெய்வம் அறிந்திலேனே பின்னிய துன்பமில்லாம் பிறப்பிடமாய தன்னில் அந்நிய எல்லாம் அனநியமாவொடுப்பே பின்னிய துன்பம் எல்லாம் பிறப்பிடமாய தன்னில் அந்நியமாய எல்லாம் அனநியமாவொடுப்பே தன்னியல் அவற்றையெல்லாம் கண்மயமாவே காண தன்னியல் அவற்றையெல்லாம் கண்மயமாவே காண வன்னிய ரமண நல்லால் அவற்றையெல்லாம் கண்மயமாவே காண பன்னிய ரமண நல்லால் பரதெய்வம் அறிந்திலேனே தெய்வம் அறிந்திடேனேவிழா பேதையேனே திருவருள் நோக்கத்தாலே தெளிவிழா பேதையேனை திருவருள் நோக்கத்தாலே வெளியெல்லாம் உள்ளாய் நின்ற விழுப்புற வீட்டில் கூட்டி தெளிவிழா பேதையேனை திருவரு நோக்கத்தாலே வெளியெல்லாம் உள்ளாய் நின்ற விழுப்புற வீட்டில் கூட்டி ஒளியெல்லாம் ஒழுங்கா நின்ற புறவொழியாக செய்த ஒளியெல்லாம் ஒழுங்கா நின்ற புறவொழியாக செய்த அழியுலாம் அவனையெல்லாம் அயலுங்கும் அறிந்திலேனே அழியுலாம் அவனையல்லால் அயல் ஒன்றும் அறிந்திலேனே இறைவனே ரமண நல்லார் பரதெய்வம் அறிந்திலேனே தன்னையே ஒப்பாரில்லா தயாளனே தோன்றியே தன்னையே ஒப்பாரில்ல தயாளனே தோன்றி மாயும் இன்னையே நிகர்த்துவியும் வேணியாயிருந்தழுங்கும் தன்னையே ஒப்பாரில்ல தயாளனே தோன்றி மாயும் இன்னையே நிகர்த்துவியும் நீயாயிருந்தழுந்தும் என்னை நீயாக என்னை நீயாக செய்த இறைவனே என்னை நீயாக செய்த இறைவனே ரமண தேவே உன்னையே அல்லால் உன்னையே அல்லால் வேறோ ஒரு தெய்வம் நம்பினேனே என்னை நீயாக செய்த இறைவனே ரமண தேவே உன்னையே அல்லால் வேறோ ஒரு தெய்வம் நம்பினேனே இறைவனே ரமணனல்லால் பர தெய்வம் அறிந்தினேனே இறைவனே ரமணனல்லால் பர தெய்வம் அறிந்தினேனே
I don't know, maybe you all don't feel what I feel when I listen, but I think sometimes there's something to not understanding the words. I can just close my eyes and just listen to the sounds of the music and the sounds of the singer without any word association. And for me, it's just, you know, my heart was open, the top of my head was tingly, you guys know the feeling. It was just, you know, I was into the devotion. So, maybe what I'll do on Sunday night, because of course Monday is a different crowd than Sunday, maybe what I'll do next Sunday night is play another Muru Ganar selection. And then after that, I have some, Ramana chants. So maybe in the teachings that follow that, I'll play a little bit of the Ramana chants. They go quite long, like 20 or 30 minutes, but I can play a little bit. As an opening to seven steps. Right now, let's just take a brief moment of silence. I don't need much because for me the music was a moment of silence. But let's take a brief moment of silence and then we will begin looking at the seven steps. Amen. All right, so today we are beginning with quote number 275. And what I am going to do is give those of you who are in the room a link to my journal, my contemplation of quote number 275. For those of you who are listening on the radio, the address is RDA7, and that is the digit 7. The word is not spelled out, just the number. RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. Again, that is RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. When you get to the blog, if you look at the menu bar, you'll notice a step 1, step 2, and step 3. Click on step 2. That's where we're at in this teaching series. And then you'll want to click on the numbering sequence that will let you find yourself to number 275, because that's where we are beginning. And I am opening the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, to number 275. Right now we are reading quotes from Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, which I mentioned is becoming one of my favorites. Cheryl said he is also her favorite. I know that Lynn loves Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, so he is winning our hearts over with his clarity and his clear way of stating his clarity. So I'm going to read number 275. This is on page 58, and this is what Nisargadatta said. In reality, only the ultimate is. The rest is a matter of name and form. And as long as you cling to the idea that only what has name and shape exists, the Supreme will appear to you non-existing. when you understand that names and shapes are hollow shells without any content whatsoever, and what is real is nameless and formless, pure energy of life and light of consciousness, you will be at peace, immersed in the deep silence of reality. All right, let's look at number 275 in the journal. Again, release the tendency to cling to body life as true life. This goes for the body life that appears to be one's self and the body lives that appear to be others. When one clings to the idea body life is true life, one blocks the seen knowing of true life as it is. Seen knowing true life as it is supreme joy. Body life is nothing compared to this. Last night, probably at number 274, I talked about how the attachment to the body is the most difficult attachment to let go of. And that's really because the mind believes it is the self, and then the mind has projected that belief that it is the self onto the body, and it says, I am this. And so we're kind of caught up in an attachment that is difficult to let go of, because in letting go of the attachment, there's a sense of letting go of what I am. And of course, no one wants to let go of what I am. You know, that's where the idea of death comes from. So it's a difficult attachment to let go of, and it's an attachment that I think we are encouraged to continually give our willingness to let go of, while simultaneously being patient with what might be the fact that we aren't quite ready yet. It's kind of like a continual onward or forward going motion. Onward or forward mean moving in the direction of letting go, while being patient with the fact that right now the body may still seem to be very important to me. Kind of both at once. And what's interesting is that we can daily, hourly, you know, every moment, if we remember that often, give willingness to let go of the perception of body life as true life. And if we are daily, hourly, moment to moment giving willingness to let go of the perception of body life as true life, we certainly are not clinging to it. You cannot cling to it and give willingness to let it go too. So understanding that the belief that I am the body is one of the primary obstacles to awakening, and then giving willingness to have that attachment dissolve, is a useful way to spend time. And as I mentioned, right now the course lessons, there's days and days and days of them, the review lessons, that they all begin with, we can all say this by heart because we've said it enough times, they all begin with, I am not a body. I am free. I am still as God created me. And of course, we know that that is not by accident that each of these reviews begin with that. Again, that's that moving forward, that onward, that releasing of this attachment that is so strong. But certainly, you know, I don't know how many course lessons there are on that series. I'll throw out the number 20 as an approximation. Certainly saying that for 20 days in a row, at least for most of us, is not going to be enough. Also, Jesus has told us in the Course that denying the body, And I would change his words, if you don't mind me doing so, just a little bit right now and say denying the body attachment is an unworthy form of denial. In other words, if I do still have a strong attachment to the body, to not go to the doctor when I noticed a lump in my breast, for example, could be quite foolish and could just end up leading to a lot of fear. So it's better, while the attachment is present, to go ahead and go through those normal steps. If I find a lump in my breast, I go to the doctor and I let them check it out. But there's also something that I can simultaneously be doing. I can be looking at and noticing my attachment to that body. I can be looking at and noticing my fear about this lump in my breast. I can be looking at and noticing the belief that I am this. And throughout the entire process, I can be giving my willingness to see differently, continuing that onward, forward movement. And if we use opportunities of attachment to the body to give willingness for that attachment to be released, well then, of course, as we continue to give our willingness, that attachment must weaken. Because we are, as the Course calls us, the Son of God. So that willingness that we're giving is a divine willingness. It's not nothing. Again, release the tendency to cling to body life as true life. This goes for the body life that appears to be oneself and the body lives that appear to be others. When one clings to the idea body life is true life, one blocks the seen knowing of true life as it is. Seeing knowing true life as it is supreme joy. Body life is nothing compared to this. And of course, another thing that may be included in this for some of us at some time is allowing our loved ones to die. Of course, you know, if our loved ones are dying, we can't stop them from doing that. But somehow there's a resistance inside that is not allowing it, even though it's happening anyway. There's a resistance inside that is not allowing it, not allowing the acceptance of it, even though it's happening. And so when death calls in our close relationships, that's another opportunity to give our willingness to let go of our attachment toward the body, our belief that the body life is true life. So why don't we scroll down to the bottom. On the left, you'll see a little blue 276 underneath the comment and reply area. And if you click on that 276, that will take you to the next journal entry. I will also paste the link in the room. Yeah, spirit is willing, flesh is weak. That is what Jesus said at the Garden of Gethsemane when he was letting go of that attachment to his body. It was not, if you read the Bible, it was not easy for him. I think it might be Mark 13. I'm not sure. No, maybe it's not Mark 13. Mark 13, I think, is where he predicted the destruction of the temple. But if you read that section where he was in the Garden of Gethsemane, letting go of his attachment to the body, you'll notice even for the Master Jesus, this was difficult. It took him 3 trips into the garden before he felt he was willing to release that, before he felt he was fully willing to release that attachment. All right, I'm going to read number 276. Again, this is Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. To take appearance for reality is a grievous sin and the cause of all calamities. Now, of course, when he says sin, he does not mean sin as you're guilty for it. When he says sin, he means much more. This is going to cause you pain and suffering and keep you stuck in illusion. to take appearance for reality is a grievous sin and the cause of all calamities. And Lynn has made a comment that the Mark 13, which was predicting the destruction of the temple, that's the same thing as detachment from the body. And certainly it could be, the Jewish people are still very attracted to the temple, even though it was destroyed, 2,000 years ago. And there are people who go to the Western Wall and pray every day for the temple to be rebuilt. So certainly the temple does represent a very strong attachment to physical form rather than God, because of course we all know that God has not been destroyed. God was not affected by the destruction of the temple in 70 AD. And so in that way, nothing has been affected, right? So it is kind of the same error. Yes. Let me go ahead and read 276 again, since I stopped to comment on that. To take appearance for reality is a grievous sin and the cause of all calamities. Actually, that fits well. Let's just stay with this temple symbol for a moment. If the temple is seen as the house of God, the holiest of all places, and the temple is destroyed, and then sometime later the Muslims come and they build the Dome of the Rock in the same place, the Dome of the Rock now becomes our enemy. And one of the things that we pray for is some kind of destruction of their holy place so that we can rebuild our holy place. With that story in mind, listen to Nisargadatta again. To take appearance for reality is a grievous sin and the cause of all calamities. You see, if I see the temple as God's holy house, I am taking appearance for reality. Form, right, is important to me. And then when the Muslims build their Dome of the Rock in the same spot, I now have an enemy. So this sin or this mistake of taking appearance for reality is now the cause of the calamity, which keeps me as a Jewish person, I'll use that example, hating my enemy, the Muslims, and wanting very much for their holy place to be destroyed so that mine can be reinstated. It's just a symbol, but it's a perfect example of how this plays out. To take appearance for reality is a grievous sin and the cause of all calamities. Remember, God was not touched in the destruction of the temple, right? God remains untouched. There, nothing happened from God's point of view. All right, let's look at number 276 in my journal. This is what I wrote after contemplating that Nisargadatta quote. To know reality as reality is supreme joy. To mistake temporary appearance for reality is the cause of all suffering. But if we just go into our imagination for a moment, let's imagine a priest, a Jewish priest, living at the time of the destruction of the temple. And let's imagine that this particular priest was actually rather mystical in his practice. He did spend time every day alone, going within, allowing the laws and the Torah to be interpreted for him. And in this way, he was what we will call very close to God in a personal relationship type of way. And then let's imagine that the day came that the Roman soldiers began to destroy the temple. And the man is listening to the screaming in the streets. He sees the fires. He hears the horses of the Romans. He hears the calls of battle. And at first there's a crush that happens in him, a crushing that happens as if something very important is being lost. And then he remembers to turn his attention to the Lord within that he speaks to all of the time. And he asks, Lord, how am I to see this? And then he hears, I am untouched by everything you see. and something in him breaks out in joy. Joy. Because now he opens his eyes and he looks about and he has that realization that God is untouched. And somehow in this realization that God is untouched, he realizes that he is untouched too. The same scene is playing out before him. There's still screams in the streets. There's still the battle calls, the sounds of the Roman horses, the temple, the fire. But he's untouched. It makes all the difference in the world. To know reality as reality is supreme joy. To mistake temporary appearance for reality is the cause of all suffering. And of course, I just made up a story. But it's a perfect example. You know, if I take the example of my body, or if I take the example of a loved one's body, if I think that appearance is reality and then something happens to that body, I suffer. But if I'm aware of the untouchedness of God, which is actually the same as the untouchedness of me or that loved one, then I can be at peace with the same circumstance. And in fact, it's really ridiculous how, if we believe that I am this body, how easily we go into suffering. Right? We're trying to read the newspaper, and our spouse keeps interrupting our attention on the paper to talk to us about stuff that we don't really care about. And after a short bit of that, we get upset. Very upset. I want to read the paper. Right? It sounds like a completely different story, but it's actually the same attachment, the belief that this is me. The belief that this is me is what leads to that upset. Because what follows this is me is also the idea that my preferences are very important and that they're necessary for my happiness. But the idea that my preferences are very important and that they're necessary for my happiness, they cannot happen if there is not first the thought, this is me. So to mistake temporary appearance, and we all know at some level this body is a temporary appearance. Every body that has ever appeared has also left appearance. Right? So to mistake temporary appearance for reality is the cause of all suffering. This is also where the fear of death comes from. If I believe that I am this, I can start becoming afraid when I start noticing this aging. I can start grieving with my first gray hair, my first wrinkle, my first extra little bit of flab, because I see the beginning of the end of me. And even though that started at around age, we'll say 40, and I'm maybe going to live to age, we'll say 88, I can now spend the next 48 years of my life grieving the oncoming of the end of me. That means I spent the first 40 years, maybe, not worrying about it, and 48 years being concerned. To mistake temporary appearance for reality is the cause of all suffering. To know reality is supreme joy. It frees us from all of that. Things can come and go. Things can shift and change. We can grow old. We can even grow sick. We can be on our deathbed and know that it's our deathbed. And if we know reality is reality, there is still supreme joy. Because there is no loss in the fading of this temporary appearance. To know reality as reality is supreme joy. To mistake temporary appearance for reality is the cause of all suffering. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 277. First, I will read 277 from the book, which is a Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj quote. Within the prison of your world appears a man who tells you that the world of painful contradictions, which you have created, is neither continuous nor permanent and is based on a misapprehension. He pleads with you to get out of it by the same way by which you got into it. You got into it by forgetting what you are, and you will get out of it by knowing yourself as you are. All right, let's look at number 277. Why must one release the tendency to cling to body life as true life? Because this misunderstanding regarding what you are and regarding what is true is the only cause of suffering. Likewise, the one answer that ends all suffering forever is the joyous remembrance of what you are. I love how the Course says, one problem, one solution. And it is true. If we have full realization of our truth without any shred of doubt, there is nothing that could happen to us at the level of form that would cause us any concern at all. And Jesus demonstrated this on the cross. And in that way, he was our Savior because he communicated to us a very important message. You are not the body, right? You do not die when the body dies. And then, in case we didn't get it, he proved it through resurrection. Through another temporary appearance. But a temporary appearance that was a stronger symbol of what we are. That which continues beyond the body. If you have an inkling of what the truth is, then you know that the resurrection of Christ cannot be real in the capital R form of the word. It was still a temporary appearance. Anything that comes and goes is illusion. There was not a resurrected Christ before there was a crucified Christ. And then this resurrected Christ, in the form that it appeared, it had a bodily type of form, remember, ascended to heaven or ceased to appear. So we could say it was also part of the illusion. But you know, there are parts of the illusion that come from wisdom. And that come from wisdom in order to point us back to truth. A Course in Miracles is a perfect example. It's a form. It did not exist before, you know, before Helen Schuckman wrote it down. Maybe someday it will be completely forgotten by the world. Right? It's not a part of reality. It's a part of illusion. But it's a part of illusion that points toward reality. The resurrection was the same. A part of illusion that points toward reality. But it's a joyous message. the joyous message that communicates to the mind, you are not the body. When the body dies or the body ends, you do not. And it prompts us to seek after that which we are by seeking inwardly. I mean, if there is a realization, a knowing that can be so complete that it is irrelevant what happens to us beyond that realization, because from then on we are forever happy and forever okay, why wouldn't we not seek that realization with every ounce of energy that we have? And look how much energy we put into trying to change things in our lives, thinking, if I can get this person to act this way or get this thing changed to be this way, or then I'll be happy. Look at all the energy we take into doing that, and we do. What if we take that energy and instead just put it into, who am I? What am I? All I want is to know myself. Who am I? What am I? All I seek is that realization. Who am I? What am I? I read a quote probably on Facebook the other day from Sri Ramana Maharshi that said, if you practice, you know, the self-inquiry all day long, all the way until you go to bed and then you go to sleep, your mind will continue to practice the self-inquiry in your sleep. And you awaken into the self-inquiry. If the only thing we asked from this life was, who am I? Don't you think the answer would come? But we ask so many other things because of this attachment to the body. We think, I am this body, and therefore I need you to treat me this way. And then we continually ask you to treat me this way. The efforts are going in the wrong direction. It's not that we can't make the effort. We do make the effort. We're always making the effort. Some of us are trying to manage 100 things so that we can be happy. We always make the effort. It's just that we make the effort in the wrong direction. And that's because we believe that body life is true life, this is me, and I need things my way to be happy. But that thought that this is me is the cause of all suffering. So we're definitely barking up the wrong tree. Why must one release the tendency to cling to body life as true life? Because this misunderstanding regarding what you are and regarding what is true is the only cause of all suffering. Likewise, the one answer that ends all suffering forever is the joyous remembrance of what you are. So, why do we put our efforts in other directions? Why not just focus them all in the direction of this one answer? It's a worthwhile question. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 278. And I will read, of course, Srinivasa Gadada Maharaj. When you shall begin to question your dream, awakening will not be far away. When you shall begin to question your dream, awakening will be not far away. I read not and be in the wrong order last time, but it didn't change the meaning of the sentence. When you shall begin to question your dream, awakening will be not far away. Let's look at the journal, number 278. Awakening is ushered in by your willingness to question every idea you hold to be true. Accept no assumption as fact, regardless of how much world experience seems to prove that assumption to be true. Question everything vivaciously while simultaneously noticing that which is always present, always quietly present. So I talked about this, I think, last night too, that at some point, you know, we have that saying, seeing is believing. But believing that seeing is believing keeps us caught in the loop of illusion. And in order to awaken from the loop of illusion, we need to be willing to realize that even though I see it, even though I experience it, even though it is my present experience, that doesn't mean it's true. And in fact, as we move forward with step two, you're going to find a lot of assumptions questioned. You're going to find a lot of inquiry happened for me while going through step two. But seeing is believing. That thought is the grand illusion. And so that thought also needs to be broken. Undone. Seen to be an untrue thought. I remember once a long time ago when Holy Spirit was teaching me the same idea using a single quiet thought. Some of you may know the single quiet thought. It's been around, you know, it's gone around on Facebook and Yahoo groups, and I've heard people quote it in teaching, so it's been around a little bit. But the single quiet thought said something like, what I think, I see, and see here means perceive. What I think, I see. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. And if you look at that, that creates a loop. Because I think a thought, and then I perceive that thought, and because I perceive it, I experience it, and then because I experience it, I start thinking about it again, and then the loop continues. So for example, let's start with a very basic thought, one that we all seem to be born with, the thought that I am unworthy, that I am somehow not good enough. I have the thought. And because I have that thought, I perceive it. You know, I do something. I remember, in fact, you know what? I remember, this is my earliest memory of proof that I was unworthy. Are you ready for this? I was probably 5 years old, just turned five, and I was in kindergarten. I didn't go to preschool, so this was my first school experience. And I don't remember exactly what happened in school, but the teacher, you know, gave us paper and crayons, and you know, I'm sure she in some way inspired us or asked us to do something. And I took a brown crayon, and I didn't, of course, I was very young. I'd never been to preschool. I knew nothing about drawing. So I scribbled and scribbled and scribbled with that crayon. And I don't know what the teacher said to me about that, but I was so proud of that. This may have been my first paper, maybe the first paper I ever brought home from school. And I took that paper home, and I showed it to my mom. My mom took it in her hands and looked at it and said, "What is it?" Now that's a simple question. but my unworthiness. The thought was already in my mind that I was unworthy. And as soon as she said to me, what is it? What my mind heard is, what is it? This is nothing. You didn't draw anything here. You can't draw. This is worthless. My mom did not say that. She said, what is it? But that's what my mind heard in the what is it. An innocent mind might have just said, I don't know. I just took a crayon and did that, right? But I didn't have an innocent mind. I had a guilty mind, a mind that had already believed it was unworthy. So my mind heard in, what is it? You're worthless. So what I think, I perceive. Now what I perceive, I experience. I can tell you, I carried that with me for years. And you know, my mom was actually a pretty good mom. I know some moms do put their kids down all the time, but my mom didn't do that. But maybe when I was 8, she made a comment one day. So now let's fast forward from age 5 to age 8, 3 years later. My brother and I were in the same tap dance class. And my mother made a comment about how good my brother was. Do you know what I heard? You'll never be good. My mother didn't say that. She was simply making a comment about how good my brother was. And you know what? My brother was good. And that's her son. Why shouldn't she make a comment? But I, the girl with the scribbly crayon proof that I'm unworthy, now hear again how unworthy I am. And then we could fast forward to high school and a comment she made about an apron I made in home ec class. I mean, you know, it just goes on. What I see, I experience. What I think, I see. Right? If I think it, I will perceive it. If I perceive it, I will experience it. And because I experienced it, I will continue to think it. And the loop continues. There's only one way to get out of that loop, and that is to start questioning every assumption I make about my experience and about the world. If I just keep blindly believing my experience, I'm going to stay in that loop, and it's a loop of delusion. The only way out is to start saying, wait a minute, is that true? Wait a minute, could that be just my perception? Remember last night I talked about how there are 6.5 billion points of view in this world. 6.5 billion points of view. Why in the world should I think my point of view is so especially right? No one else has my exact point of view. No one. And there are 6.5 billion points of view on the planet right here alone, in this time alone. Why should I think that the way I see is so especially right? Why not question it? Especially if questioning it is going to begin to break that bond of that seeing-believing loop, which keeps me stuck in delusion and keeps me suffering. Why not start to question? Why am I so excited to keep believing my perception? Awakening is ushered in by your willingness to question every idea you hold to be true. Accept no assumption as fact, regardless of how much world experience seems to prove that assumption to be true. Question everything vivaciously, while simultaneously noticing that which is always quietly present. This is moving our attention to that which is constant, that which is unaffected, that which can allow the temple to be destroyed. That which can allow time to come and go. That which can allow things to shift and change. Because it's always quietly present and it's always completely unaffected. Awakening is ushered in by your willingness to question every idea you hold to be true. accept no assumption as fact. Accept no assumption as fact, regardless of how much world experience seems to prove that assumption to be true. Question everything vivaciously while simultaneously noticing that which is always quietly present. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 279. And I will start by reading number 279 in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. This is Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. Your world is transient, changeful. My world is perfect, changeless. I mentioned last night that when Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj says I or me, he is speaking from the point of view of the Absolute, or what we would call God. You literally could call Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj the voice for God. So when he says I or me, he is not speaking as a man, he is speaking as the Absolute, the Divine, the Whole, the Totality, that which is real. And he says, your world is transient, changeful. My world is perfect, changeless. All right, let's look at the journal. As long as a changing world is experienced, one does not experience reality. Be clear on this and do not respond to unreality as if it is real. Instead, respond always and to everything by returning attention to self-inquiry and self-watching. Make self-inquiry and self-watching your heartfelt, ongoing spiritual practice. So we're like kindergartners here. At the beginning step of learning not to believe the world. I mean, we've talked about the world not being real for a very long time. But now we're going to start non-responding. You know, Ramana Maharshi is a great symbol of non-responding. I am not going to suggest that anyone go and copy Ramana Maharshi. In fact, I think that this would be the most foolish thing you could do unless you were absolutely certain it was your guidance. Remember, denial of the body is a very unworthy form of denial. But Ramana Maharshi had guidance. And as a young boy, I think 17, he left his home and he went to Tiruvannamalai at the foot of Arunachala. And he began to ignore the world, not respond. And he, if you read the stories of him during this period of time, it was very extreme, but if you listen to it as a symbol, it's a strong, strong symbol. He would sit with his eyes closed in stillness without eating. There are stories of bugs literally eating his flesh. He did not respond. Then people began to notice how his body was being abused and the bugs were eating him and he was not responding. And so other people began to come and care for him, put food in his mouth and take care of him, clean him up. But for years he continued non-responding. And then students began to come and they'd ask questions. And at first there was no response. And then a gradual response began to come. Occasionally he would write something in the dirt or something like that. And then eventually, and I believe this was after approximately 17 years, a man came and asked a question. where something was strong enough in the question or strong enough in the sincerity, or it was just time that Ramana came out and began to teach. It's a strong symbol of non-responding to the world, and I think that this is why Ramana came to be such a clear representation of the divine. So how are we to not respond while we're working jobs, while we're raising families? Well, our inner guidance will guide us in that. One thing that my inner guidance is often saying to me now is just to have no opinion. So as my friends and my family come with stories, sometimes one person has a story about another person. Certainly there's no taking sides or anything like that, but even more, I'm to just listen with no opinion. I can sometimes wrap my arms around a person if that's appropriate. I can offer just to be with them, take a walk with them, if that's appropriate. But the guidance that I'm commonly receiving now is to have no opinion. And do you see how having no opinion within my own head is a non-response, even though the physical body may still be there? And I can't tell you what your non-response guidance is in an active world, but I can tell you that activity does not mean that you have to respond to the world. If you're always inwardly focused, instead of responding directly to what somebody says to you, if somebody says something and then you go inward and ask questions like are in the teachings of Inner Ramana, how am I to see this? What am I to think? How am I to respond? If your reaction is always coming from what's inwardly given, you're actually not responding to the world, even though you may speak. Somebody says something to you and you say something back. It's an appearance of responding to that person. But if you went inward and asked, how am I to see this? What am I to say? And then you come back out with that, you're not directly responding to the world. You're only following guidance. And then there's these practices that we can practice all of the time if we want. The self-inquiry, who am I? What am I? And this self-watching, this being aware of that which is always quietly present. Other things shift and change, come and go, move and stop moving, but this does none of that, and yet it's always here. As long as a changing world is experienced, one does not experience reality. Be clear on this. And do not respond to unreality as if it is real. Don't give it that credit. Instead, respond always and to everything by returning attention to self-inquiry and self-watching. Make self-inquiry and self-watching your heartfelt, ongoing spiritual practice. And with that, I am done for the day. I will be back on Friday with Lynn. Everybody have a wonderful week. Thank you. Bye-bye.